Hey, is this thing on? Testing. Welcome to the Boost VC podcast, your weekly dose of fun, informative interviews with incredible guests from the Boost VC network. We'll dig into the latest topics around venture capital, startups, and emerging technologies. I'm your host, Adam Draper, founder and managing director of Boost VC and a fourth generation venture capitalist. Are you ready to rock? Tell me what you're gonna do. And we're here today with Sebastian Serrano with Repio. It's a token company, well, token protocol and company that's focused on delivering a new layer of credit to the world. Sebastian was also a Tribe 2 alumni of Boost VC, which is
right
really
from the beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning.
From the beginning.
It's a much different program now.
Yes.
Yeah. We experimented with you. So welcome.
Love to be here.
What was your background that led you to starting a company?
I've been a nerd all my life. I grew up in a small town in the Patagonia, in the south of Argentina. I think I saw a magazine with a computer when I was 8 or 7. And I banged my dad to buy me a computer. And it was like after a year, he bought me one. And he bought me a Commodore 64.
Nice.
It was an old computer used. But in that's such an old computer, the only thing you could do was program, or you won't be make it anything. So I teach myself to code. So I've been a programming since 8. In the 90s, I saw the internet. I think it was in a trip to Buenos Aires or something, 93 or something like that. When I was in my last year of high school, with other people, we built an ISP, an internet service provider.
Cool.
For my hometown. And that was kind of like the first experience with a startup or like a project of the internet. So going forward, I studied physics, then computer science. I work in other internet service providers and end up building a software company that made MVPs for startups in the Silicon Valley and across the US. In 2012, I saw Bitcoin and it was like,
do you remember when you saw it first?
First actual time was in New York in 2011, and it crashed. And I saw an article on Slashdot, and also see a meetup about Bitcoin in Startup Dishes. So I read a little bit about it, but not too much. So I didn't dig into it and didn't vote until 2012. And in 2012, a few things are starting to happen. Our government in Argentina started to restrict capital flows strongly. Like, it was always difficult to move money in and out of Argentina, but there was a huge control. At the same time, there was a lot of inflation, and it was becoming difficult to move money in and out, and inflation was going through the roof. And I saw Bitcoin again in 2012, and it was like it resonated so much. And then I did a lot of like digging into it. And it was, wow, this is the internet again.
This is the next layer.
It's a new network. It's not the network for communications or information that is the internet, but is the network for value and trust. And it's a good form of money. It was like a deja vu with the ISP when I was in...
I do feel that the people who really dealt with ISPs understand Bitcoin on a different level. They were laying the groundwork for what Bitcoin was going to be playing with.
Yeah. So it was clear that the thing that had to be done was build infrastructure. The first thing that you had to do with a network is allow people to access it. So it was like, we got to build again the ISPs. And that is the wallets, the payment providers, the exchanges. That is the base infrastructure layer so people can access the network.
Yeah, so in 2013...
It was time to start it.
Yeah, we met.
Yeah.
And what I do want to identify about Sebastian and being a tenacious founder was that every single event I was at, he was at. And that means that he was at more than I was at.
Yeah.
And he was just around the entire crypto ecosystem, which wasn't called crypto.
Yeah, it wasn't called crypto. You don't know how much I work for for talking with you.
Yeah, so. I do actually. I do. Well, not exactly how much, because we were the first announcing that we were supporting the Bitcoin ecosystem. Yeah. I just remember relentless. That's what I remember. And like when we were in the decision-making process for actually accepting you, I remember Brayden and I were going back and forth, and we were just like, he shows up to everything. He's not going to stop. Like, that was the determining factor. It was just like, that paid off. Yeah. Your relentlessness. So I just wanted to highlight that. Someone asked me recently, who's one of the founders that you admire? And I actually said you because of that, because of the relentlessness. I always remember that. You started BitPagos. Mm-hmm. You were thinking we need to onboard people like the ISPs.
Yeah.
Was that the idea behind BitPagos?
So we started with BitPagos as a payment processor for a few things. One is it was very difficult for merchants to charge international clients. We had that issue at our consulting company. We had a lot of experience doing payment processing before working consulting like a lot of payment companies. So I had some experience on payments. So it was easier for us to enter that way.
Through a payment system.
Through a payment system. The initial year was only payments. And it was doing well. We were like bringing a lot of Bitcoin into Argentina. And something that started to happening is that there was no one buying the Bitcoins. And we even were dumping the price. Like it was cheaper to buy Bitcoin in Argentina than in anywhere else. It was like 5 to 10% discount.
Wow.
Because all the Bitcoin that we were bringing in. And it was clear that we needed to build the other side so that it was like people.
Sort of an exchange side.
Yeah, the exchange side. So we launched Rippy as the wallet because we have all this flow going in and we needed people to start taking the Bitcoins that we were bringing into the country. As we tried to make BitPagos more international and try to grow it more into our ambitions, it became very difficult. Because there are many other countries that are so fucked up as Argentina. Sadly. But, well, good for the world, not for our business at that time. But Rippy was working well and it was growing. So we started to put more and more focus into Rippy and getting more into the consumer side. And we started learning a lot more about the consumers, how they behave, and starting to help a lot in democratizing access into financial services. Like more than 60% of our users don't have banking. They don't have a bank account, or the way that we build a way so that you can fund the wallet is through agents that the users go with cash and that loads the wallet and then they can buy Bitcoin and pay things online.
That's amazing. So the promise of Bitcoin was always banking the unbanked, and you have done that for 60% of your users.
Yes. So many of our users never put a foot on a bank, but they have a wallet and they are having a financial instrument. From there, we started to see much bigger need, which is how we build a full suite of financial services for these people that is not cartelized and it doesn't have huge fees and that the financial industry charges in emerging markets. That is what took us into build and start working on credit. We saw a huge need on building tools so that all these people that we have as users start having most common financial tool, which is access to credit. And that evolved and being a blockchain company, we saw that this has to exist in the blockchain world. There has to be a way that we can build a contract that represents credit. And it's just how the future will be. And so I think like the role of an entrepreneur is to see the future and bring it and make it
bring reality. It to us. Yeah.
And make it reality. We got obsessed into that and that was pushed us into build a credit network.
So and then you've rebranded fully as Rippy. You have like BitPagos was the original payment process. Yeah. Now you're Rippy credit network.
Yeah.
And how's it going?
So it's doing very well, both things. Well, the wallet is growing. We are the main wallet in Argentina, growing a lot in Brazil. That side of like the base infrastructure is growing. It's doing really well and it's profitable business. With the credit network, it's in much earlier stages, but it's already working. We are pushing loans into the network.
Oh, wow.
And we did an ICO for building a community and a token that represents the value inside the network is the value of the network. And something that initially we thought was like, well, we will do the ICO, we'll get funds, and we will use part of that funds to start funding the loans.
Yeah.
So that we'll bootstrap with part of the funds that we're taking. And one of the very interesting things about making a token and building a business this way is that it builds a community. And so far, just a few loans have been funded for us for testing, but almost all of them has been funded by the community.
So you were able to jumpstart a community through fundraising.
So through fundraising. We launch, so we connect our wallet. When a user is asking for a credit, that creates a smart contract that is pushed to the network. And then there is a credit exchange where lenders can go, and it's kind of like a marketplace, and you can fund that loans. With everyone that participated in the crowd sale, we give them an invite and whitelisted them into the credit exchange. So they have exclusive access into the alpha and beta of the network. And with that community has been the one that has been funding all the loans so far. And it's a very good way to bootstrap and jumpstart a new product with a community that's
incentivized
and incentivized.
Yeah, everyone always says that this is the way to incentivize a network to get start going. You actually had the result of that.
Yeah.
Which, well, fundraisings, I think this is the year where people are either delivering or not delivering products. Yeah. And so that's exciting.
Yeah, it has a lot of weird things. Like, the industry will mature eventually. We'll have to find what works and what doesn't. There's a lot of experimentation right now.
Completely. Thematically, you know, when you got into Bitcoin to now, there have been a lot of almost cultural changes in the ecosystem. How would you describe those changes? Like, if you met a crypto Bitcoin person then and now, like, who do you think is representative of those two people?
I think it's even more than two.
That's true. So, there are a lot of different people now.
So if we go back in time, it's like 2012, it was just very strong believers that were mostly ideological or very technical, that saw the technical potential, or very ideological, like libertarians. And in 2012, it was like mostly weird people.
Yeah.
Like, I remember May 2013 conference, it was weird people.
Oh, yeah.
And
did you say 2013?
The conference.
The big one, the Bitcoin in San Jose. Yeah, it was a weird group.
It was a weird
group. I was there. And, you know, what I vividly remember was Coinbase was paying a 0.1 Bitcoin referral fee.
Yeah.
0.1. So you could have collected hundreds of thousands of dollars if you just got a bunch of people signed up. Legendary. Yeah. And held for 3 years. Yeah, 5 years or whatever. Oh my gosh, it's 2018. Yeah. Like, wow. Okay, yeah. If you held for 5 years.
5 years. Then there was the first huge bubble, like involved. The first bubble that took us to 1,000, that brought a lot of people. It's a similar time today. There is a lot of people that is coming in because of all this excitement that exists. There was a crash and no one wanted to talk about Bitcoin. And that made a lot of people switch to blockchain.
Yeah.
And it was like the blockchain days and no one wanted to talk about Bitcoin. That was 2000, mid 2014 to 15.
Like 12 months ago, 14. Yeah.
Yeah,
you remember,
tough.
You remember when every bank was coming and saying like, oh, well, Bitcoin's not a thing, but like we're really excited about blockchain.
And it was tough because we stayed as a Bitcoin company.
Yeah.
Like,
and through the winter. I call that the winter.
The winter. Through the entire winter, we were a Bitcoin company. And we tried to put blockchain here and there, but it was clearly a Bitcoin company. People were doing a lot of proof of concept for institutions and banks and all this wasted time.
Yeah.
And energy. And now we're going back into like in another bubble of excitement that is bringing a lot of people. Something that I think is happening right now is that before it was like we were trying to bring people into the ecosystem because there was not that many. And now it's like hard.
Now we're like, trying to hold the doors.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be in crypto right now.
I get 10 resumes a week that are like very credible people in the world who are like trying to get crypto. Like they built a business on social or they built a business on, and now they're thinking, hey, I want to be in crypto. It's fascinating. That's all. It was a huge change.
It has been a huge change. So you have kind of like all the people that has come after opportunity, people that has come from technical backgrounds. The ones that are in a smaller percent are the ideological ones, like the weirdness has gone out.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. The smaller percent, they're still there, obviously, and they're shouting loudly, but like it's more the entrepreneur, like the people who want to change and work with the system a little bit to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah, fix problems. I feel like people are fixing problems now. I mean, you were fixing problems 5 years ago, but now you get the support of the ecosystem. I think one of the fascinating things about today versus then was all the governments are having to make a stance on whether they are for or against like Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah.
Like everyone always asks me like, what if all these countries like regulate the crypto markets? Like, what is your response? I'm assuming people have asked you. I never have a great answer. I'm just like, it's sort of like we've been through so many ups and downs. I'm just sort of like, nothing's going to kill it.
Yeah.
It's going to be here.
I think for governments, it depends a lot on each geography and the characteristics of that government. In our region, and the governments have been so far very open. They are learning and studying it a lot more, like really starting to do things. Something that is kind of amazing for me is like the Central Bank of Argentina created an innovation board inside the central bank, and we are invited as advisors.
That's so exciting.
And so that we bring the blockchain information and they start to learn about this. And by engaging with the regulators and teaching them, then they see that it's not that such a bad thing.
It's not scary.
It's not as scary as it may look from the media. So far, we, at least in Argentina, and in a little bit less in Brazil, there is a good framework that is being built. Now there is a law on how it's taxed. So
it legitimizes.
It legitimizes a lot. So I think one of the biggest things that is going to make it stay is that once the governments are starting collecting taxes, they're not going to shut it down.
Yeah, that's... I literally, like, we're going to have more rules come out right before tax, like, right in April, that are going to say, this is how Bitcoin's going to be taxed.
Yeah.
And it's going to legitimize it, but it's also, you know, a lot of people are going to be upset.
Yeah.
But it's like, hey, you know, you made money, like, just pay your taxes, whatever. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. So the most struggles, I think, is going to be out there, are going to be how it's taxed and how the government finds the profits.
Completely.
And that is because now it is a lot of money.
Yeah. So you really focus really hard on the credit system.
Yeah.
Are there any other projects that are in the ecosystem that you're very excited about?
I think we need more tools, frameworks, or libraries to start building smart contracts. And like, we need a better tool set to work in all these exciting ideas that there are. Like, there is a lot of potential, but still, I think there is a need for better tools.
It's limited.
It's limited. And like, I know only one good project that is focused entirely on tools. I think identity, I don't yet have seen a good product that you can use that product and say, okay, if the user is coming from here, the KYC is not an issue.
Yeah.
Have not seen a project that has.
And that makes sense for coming from credit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you need identity in order to build up a reputation that shows credit.
I think that there are a few other things that we see that are problems, like liquidity between markets. There is still a lot of arbitrage. By crypto moving so fast, why there is arbitrage opportunities between exchanges?
Huge arbitrage.
Yeah. There are things that need to be solved around there. And then for Bitcoin, I think scalability is the biggest issue for Bitcoin. And I hope the Lightning Network is something that helps it.
But Lightning Network being the only argument to like Bitcoin scalability is not great.
Not great at all. So I think it's like the biggest threat for Bitcoin as the currency, not technology. It will be bad like if the most valuable chain becomes second. It puts a lot of worry on like any chain could go up and down.
Completely.
And I think we don't want that outcome.
Yeah.
But
we'll see. I mean, a lot of the questions are very like, what happens, you know, in the future?
Yeah.
We've been telling the future for 5 years. Now what's going to happen? Okay. So the next part of this is the lightning round. So I go, lightning round, and I don't give you the questions. And now I give you the questions.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite quote?
No. The last one that I read that I like it a lot was, do not practice what you don't want to become.
That's great.
I think like you always get the advice, you should practice a lot the things that you want to become.
Like, yeah.
If you want to be a good golfer, you have to golf a lot. If you want to be a good snowboarder, you have to snowboard a lot. But the corollary is that don't do the things that you don't want to be.
Yeah.
If you let the internal argument win every time you do something that you don't should just not be doing, that build up in you. We have neural networks that get dopamine infused every time that you
just
do something.
This is positive.
This is positive.
So if you keep, you might get a false negative sort of thing where it's, if you keep doing something you don't want to become.
Yeah.
I like that. Do you have a morning routine?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's something that took me years to build into a good morning routine. So I have a good breakfast every day, always. I train for an hour. I'm currently doing weights on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I'm swimming on Tuesday and Thursday.
Wow.
So every day, 1 hour. So then I go to work. I work my ass and then come back at home and I try to do something relaxing. So that's the day. You ask the morning, I tell you the day.
Yeah.
So while I play music, I do drums, or I read something, I try to read every day too.
That's great. Last year, I started one and it's great. I wake up at 5:30. I write for 30 minutes in like a journal.
Okay.
And then I read for 30 minutes and then I go through my schedule, my calendar, and I write down all the questions I want to ask during those meetings so that I'm semi-prepared. And then I write down my priorities and then I work on my priorities until I have to go take a shower. It also includes a cup of coffee, but it's a banana cup of coffee right at the beginning. And then I go through this. Yeah. I think it's really important. I think having a routine is like crazy important.
Yeah. I think it sets up your day in a much better way. I don't have so many meetings like you. I try to avoid meetings.
Instead of meetings, and I'm envious of you in some ways. But the priorities.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, I'm going in this direction. What do I need to do? I do have a bunch of meetings and because I have to meet with companies.
It's part of your work.
It's part of my job.
It's your.
But if I really assess what my priorities are, like there's a way not to have as many meetings. This is a question that I deal with all the time.
Yeah.
It's good feedback.
But I think like one good thing about your routine is that it's good to at least have something that you want to achieve every day.
Yeah.
And try to conquer something every day.
My sister always says, you want to do something that scares you every day. So like there was a guy on the ski slopes over the weekend. He actually told this to my friend, but my friend told it to me. My friend was asking about snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
And he said like, hey, what should I do? Like I'm trying to get better. And he's like, look for a run that scares you and then go do it. And then he snowboards away like this master philosopher snowboarder. Okay. What's your favorite food?
Salmon.
Not mata.
Mate. You took mate. Mate is like our coffee.
Yes.
So it's an infusion. It's not food. So,
if an actor played you in a movie about your life, who would you want it to be?
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. Well played. What is your favorite book right now?
What is my favorite book right now? It's a difficult one. So books that I like lately, I like a lot Sapiens.
I'm reading Homo Deus right now, which is the other one.
I also read that one. I love more Sapiens. In Crypto, The Sovereign Individual.
Someone recommended that to me recently.
Well, it's an old book, but it's kind of like, it has the trends that bring us to today. I was reading The Daily Stoic lately. Good quotes.
Good quotes.
For the day. On fitness, I'm reading again Starting Strength from Mark Ripetoe. It's a good book.
Have you read Essentialism?
No.
I think it's great. That was the one that got me like, I need a routine. It was the one that spoke to me because I was like, I need it. And it worked really, really well.
It's hard for me favorite things, but I have a bunch of things that I like.
Good. And what is your definition of success?
What is my definition of success? I don't have a definition of success. I do know there are a few characteristics of character that I think are the most important for me. And I try to push them all the time. And they are courage. It's like going through that slope that scares you.
Okay,
and
got it.
It requires courage to do that. Life is short if you don't have a purpose. But if you have a purpose, it's long enough to achieve it. the word like has no meaning, and there is like in this entire randomness. But we as humans, we want to have meaning.
So make meaning.
You had to build your purpose, and it's in you to do it. I think in one of the things that make us humans is empathy, and that is what builds up justice. So try to improve my empathy, and then wisdom. The wisdom is what allow us to make good decisions, to build the things that we build. So success is like, you look back in my life and I have improved in all these things.
Improving and pushing those things.
Yeah. So I don't have an end goal. It's just a continuous.
It's great.
Improving.
Thanks for being on the Boost VC podcast.
Love it.
Unfortunately, we don't have enough time for Mark Zuckerberg today. But tune in next week when he's available. Thank you so much for tuning in during your busy day to learn more about emerging technologies. We at Boost VC are happy that you're a part of our community. Make sure to check us out at Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Boost VC. Or go to our website, www.boost.vc. And remember, love your tribe, hustle every day, and stay true to yourself. This is Adam Draper, signing off.
Big black eagles flying around this town. One of these days he's gonna pay a visit, drop his load on the ground. What you gonna do?